The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Do we still, in 2019, have cultural institutions and traditions in our society that allow, promote, and even encourage sexual assault? The Texas Association Against Sexual Assault is meeting in San Antonio this week and is bringing together advocates, service providers, and prevention ears working in the anti-sexual assault field. The 2019 theme is Traditions and Transformations. It's looking at how our society is falling short in stopping sexual violence, caring for victims, and bringing perpetrators and predators to justice. Lots of ways for you to join our conversation this afternoon. Call in at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined today with Rose Luna. She's the executive director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. Rose, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Rick Giprich Jr. He is the TASA Regional Outreach and Support Program Director. Rick, great to have you back.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
And Rebecca Bernhardt is the TASA Public Policy Coordinator. Rebecca, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
Rose Luna, executive director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. What is the state of sexual assault that we have right now in Texas and in the nation?
The status of sexual assault, well, we've got a lot going on. As a whole, the movement of the anti-sexual violence movement has been put through the ringer. It started with the Me Too movement, which was great. It started off as this really amazing momentum to let folks know that it's okay to come forward, and folks were coming forward, and that's what we want, for them to be able to feel comfortable to do that. It took, in my opinion, a slight turn where then we had pundits on the air, media, just folks who weren't on the ground experts talking about it, inadvertently, you know, providing some victim blaming type of messaging. And again, no intention there, but that was just starting to happen. Then it got a little political. But I am very proud of the folks here in Texas. We have legislative session happening right now. We've had some bills and that we've had going through the pike that have a bipartisan effort, and they've actually brought content experts to the table, which as TASA, such as TASA, and other folks that are working on the ground, as well as survivors. So we're really excited about that. But we still have a big problem with the misconception of sexual violence and what that looks like. We have an issue with folks disclosing and other folks just, again, not completely understanding all the nuances. And so their response may be something like, well, why did you this or why did you that? As opposed to, I'm sorry this happened to you. I believe you. You know, let's see what we can do next. So we have a lot. We've come, you know, we're taking steps in the right direction, and we take a couple of steps back every now and then. But we are heading, and it takes a holistic approach, which is I'm excited that we're able to talk with you about today.
Right. It seems like every movement is going to have this maybe three steps forward, two steps back, and then its progress is never impeded or there's never any kind of pushback. Rick Giprich Jr., TASA Regional Outreach and Support Program Director, and I guess that goes for this as well. It's not always going to be a straight line, always finding progress. There's always going to be obstacles, detours, pushback, but in order to continue forth, you have to identify, you have to promote, and you have to bring people on board and have community conversations, I imagine.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. In this movement, there's this weird thing that happens, and it's exactly like you said. We have progress, and we're doing these really great things in communities and across the state and across the country to address the issues. And then a major news story happens. A campus or a college, you know, gets in trouble for the way that they responded. A politician gets accusations thrown against them, a celebrity. And then everyone has an opinion, everyone has a conscience, everyone has a voice. And so everyone tries to derail each other's message and kind of push back on some of the accusations. And what that does for us as advocates is it has a tendency to lend itself for us to take a step back and say, okay, let's reframe this message because we're getting off track, when really it's all about the survivors and making sure that survivors are heard, that they know that they're believed, just like Rose said, and that they know that there is support. So for us, having to take a step back helps us reframe, and it helps us really look at the issue. Because I think the most important thing for us to remember is that sexual violence, domestic violence, intimate partner violence, those aren't really the problems that we have. The problem is that those are actually symptoms of a larger problem. And the larger problem are things like oppression and racism and sexism and homophobia, transphobia, Islamophobia. So all of that rhetoric leads to us having to, again, reframe this message, take a step back, and look at it from a very different lens.
And Rebecca Bernhardt, as this conversation moves forward, there's still a legislative session that's underway in Austin. Are there bills in Austin that y'all are looking at and y'all are tracking with a lot of interest?
Yes, we have several bills that are making their way through the legislative process. We're having a really good session. We're really excited that we have money in the budget to help eliminate wait lists for services at rape crisis centers. We're a member organization, and so before session, we went out to our membership and asked them about what services they had wait lists for and provided that information to the budget writers at the legislature. And so there's money in the budget to eliminate wait lists for services throughout Texas at rape crisis centers, and we're really excited that that is moving forward.
And does that include getting these rape kits tested?
There is also a significant amount of money in the budget to test sexual assault exam kits, thousands of which are waiting to be tested because of a lack of capacity at DNA labs in Texas. So that is another piece of the budget that we're really happy about. It's going to take a while for the capacity of those labs to get built up. But there is there are a lot of resources being dedicated to expanding our capacity to test those rape kits.
But as the legislature is looking at toughening up on sexual assault, is there some sort of carve out that is raising eyebrows about for schools and for churches and for gymnastics?
So there's a bill that's currently before the Senate. It's House Bill 3809. That would expand the statute of limitations for bringing a civil suit because of sexual assault. And that bill is, as it came out of the House, it had an amendment on it that would have only expanded the statute of limitations for individuals, but not for organizations. So we're really concerned about that because, for example, there are all of these survivors of the sexual misconduct of Larry Nassar, the doctor who worked for USA Gymnastics here in Texas. And that misconduct shouldn't be treated differently, or at least the responsibility of the institutions, USA Gymnastics and the university he worked for, shouldn't be treated differently than his responsibility, since those institutions knew what was going on.
And it's kind of bizarre because it seems like it's a bill that would say we're going to get tough on bank robbers, except at banks, you know, because we know this is where this thing is happening. And if you need to provide some sort of relief and justice and healing for the victims, that's where you would want to provide that. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll open up the phone lines. We've got some voicemails from our listeners. Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What are the traditions, the norms in our society that allow, permit, even encourage sexual assault against men and women? 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We have traditions and societal norms that permit sexual violence all around us. What are these traditions and societal norms? We've made progress in pushing back on some of them. You know, the casting couch used to be something that was pretty much accepted and normalized in society, in Hollywood, and things that would happen in offices. Has that been put away? What else needs to happen? We still have some strange relationships between teachers and students in high school, middle school, and even in college. Why is that allowed to continue? It's still a power structure that's being exploited for some. Why is this normal? The number is 210-614-8980. And is that sexual assault when it's between two adults? 210-614-8980. Let's go to a caller that we have. This is from Kathy.
I believe one of those steps is to teach equality of all genders, because that's not happening right now. They're still very much seen as a power over relationship. And that teaching begins with small kids and what happens in the home, what happens in the media. I also believe we need an equal rights amendment. If we had an equal rights amendment, then we would have to enforce it. But if you have it on the books, then it's there. Right now, for example, male battering of women, male sexual assault of women, et cetera, is not seen as the federal hate crime it should be seen as. And perhaps it's because of the gross number that would be qualify under that. But I think that's the whole point of going ahead and calling those hate crimes and asking for equality through an equal rights amendment. House Bill 366 was filed in December, and it's supposed to have good relationships taught in schools. I think gender equality is one of those things. And then proper enforcement of the laws that we do have.
All right, a lot there from Kathy. Rebecca Bernhardt, the TASA Public Policy Coordinator, she mentioned the ERA and also House Bill 366. Can you talk about the ERA? Would that provide more protections for women?
You know, I think it probably would. And I think it is true that the earlier that we start educating children that boys and girls are equal and have, you know, sort of equal rights and equal power in relationships, the better. And that's not something that Texas does a great job of right now.
Rose Luna, Executive Director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. Are we teaching the children well?
I think we have a long way to go in that area. So I do believe that we need to start while they're young and to promote a different kind of curriculum. We need to move away from this is what you need to do to keep yourself safe. But two, this is, you know, the equity piece, the equality piece that everyone's talking about. But I also feel that it's important that we review the structures, as we mentioned earlier, the power structures, because as long as those are status quo, we can teach all day long. And then once you get to a certain point, you then begin to adhere to this power structure that, you know, that contains all the inequity, that contains the subjugation, that then leads to these symptoms of sexual violence, domestic violence, and all these other things. So it's again, a holistic, slow-moving approach, but we need to move forward.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this report that came out late last year from the American Psychological Association, that some had called it the Toxic Masculinity Report, where it talked about this construct that we have here in America of masculinity, which can be very detrimental to the health of men and then to the women around them, as the men are unable to really function, some men who are victim of this, well in society. And Rose Luna, have y'all looked at that report? Does that speak to what you're all about?
Yes, and we actually do a lot of training and technical assistance around that. You know, for example, we talk about how even in the world of sexual assault, like male victims don't come forward as often. And I believe it's because of that construct that men are supposed to, you know, act a certain way, behave a certain way. So being a victim and vulnerability, that runs counter to what they're taught, how they're supposed to be. So this absolutely hits at the heart, you know, of our work and what we do. And that report absolutely just kind of reaffirmed the things that we know that we've seen on the ground.
Yeah, so talking about male sexual assault, we almost have institutionalized that, or actually we have, in our prison system. and we have almost state-sanctioned male sexual assault happening with us in these prisons, and we use that as form of punishment in our society. We joke about it all the time, inappropriately, and something that really should be now, if we were to move forward on this, we need to make this off out of bounds. Joking about dropping the soap and other things in prison and about how this is the way things are. Well, this is not the way things are supposed to be. Prison is not a place where you have a cast of people who are going to be victimized sexually and because they broke the law. That seems really wrong, and it feeds into a homophobic way of thinking that is also wrong as well. So Rick Gipprich Jr. with the TASA Regional Outreach and Support Program Director, I mean, do you see this too? Is this something that's all around us, this joking about sexual assault in prison? I mean, that's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually worked for the Rape Crisis Center here locally in San Antonio for many years doing community education, and I worked with a lot of youth from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade. And it was really interesting how boys talk about sexual assault versus girls talk about sexual assault. For boys, it's a sense of entitlement, and they almost see sexual assault itself as a punishment for doing something else bad. Whereas with girls, what we had a tendency to do was, not us, but the way girls talk about it is as a way to protect themselves from being assaulted. And so we have this really interesting separation of how we have our conversations. And so that was what we did. And we focused on risk reduction for a very long time. And that was what the movement was about. It was changing a victim's behavior to decrease the chances of becoming a victim ever in your life or becoming a victim again. And so our job in probably 2007, 2008 was to shift that conversation away from changing a victim's behavior to changing the societal conditions that exist that allow sexual violence to happen. So what that meant was engaging boys and girls together in this dialogue so that young men can hear from these girls how they live their lives every day and the fact that they live their lives in fear. As a society, we've done a horrible job of raising young girls to fear everything. We give them mace. We give them rape whistles. We teach them self-defense. We tell them not to go out to their cars late at night. Those kinds of conversations don't happen with young boys. And so what we have a tendency to do is raise these girls to fear men. So I can almost guarantee you, this is true in my life, every woman in my family, every friend that I have that is identifies as female, lives their life in constant protection. And that's not a concern for me as a male. That's my privilege, right? And so our job in this movement, specifically with our local programs, is to shift those conversations to a more equitable approach to negotiating sex between two consenting adults, regardless of gender, but also letting boys understand that they are accountable for their actions and what they say and do has consequences.
Rose Luna, Executive Director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, as you look at these things like prevention, taking care of victims, pursuing justice, what's the priority?
The priority is to have a courageous conversation with our community members at the local level and at the state level to really understand the source. What is feeding this? And it's basically, Rick mentioned, the power, even with the different conversations that are happening between young boys and young girls, you see the power dynamic just kind of shine right through. And so with our new approach to prevention, it is moving from risk reduction, which is watch your drink, travel in, you know, packs so you don't get raped, basically, to how can we begin to scratch the surface and then begin to hopefully, you know, dismantle at some level this power structure, because at the heart of it, it's power. We mentioned earlier about in prisons and the prison rape, a lot of that has to do with just a power struggle there. Like, I'm going to dominate, I'm going to subjugate. So again, at the heart of sexual violence is power and control and subjugation and demeaning. And a lot of that, a ways to get to that is not necessarily by just watching your drink, but by actually taking a step back and taking a holistic approach to what else do we need to address that's feeding the source of all these things.
Rebecca Bernhardt, with the policy side of this thing at the TASA, how are we shaping public policy towards solutions, prevention, or justice? What is the main thrust?
Well, I would say that, you know, we're working in a bunch of different areas, but we're a little bit behind where we could be. You know, we have really basic needs in Texas, for example, just to respond to sexual assault survivors' access to forensic exams. In most of the counties in Texas, there's no access to a forensic nurse just because of geography. So one of our bills, SB 71 by Senator Nelson, would use telemedicine to ensure that rural parts of the state have access to forensic nurses to perform sexual assault exams on survivors. You know, that's really important. And it's, I would say, you know, at sort of a more basic level in terms of what we need to do to respond to the needs of survivors.
And does this vary in our society with communities of color, different cultural norms, Rick Kiprich?
Yeah, so one of the things that we were charged with, again, is kind of leading the state's approach to prevention and how we were going to switch from risk reduction to prevention efforts. And so there was a good funding source that we get that's federal money that comes in that allows our programs all across the state to engage in prevention efforts. And again, preventing sexual violence is looking at it from a very different lens. And so you have to take into consideration your communities, who your community is, what your community looks like, what access do they have to language, to services, and to resources. So all of our programs are charged with understanding their community needs and making sure that what their efforts, the efforts they're putting forth, are rooted in a survivor-focused, trauma-informed, and a prevention-focused community approach to addressing the issue. Every community did a needs and resource assessment as part of their funding. And what we did here when I worked at the Rape Crisis Center in San Antonio was understand that talking to the community and doing focus groups, there were major issues of traditions and what it means to be a Latino and to be a Latino male, poverty, general tolerance of sexual assault, weak sanctions against perpetrators in our community. All of those things were really rooted in how families, mostly of color, kind of dealt with the issue internally because of a lack of trust with the system and the structures that were in place that they weren't going to get the justice that they needed.
So these issues of cultural norms that are almost permitting sexual assault, they exist in all sort of our cultural subsets that we have, but they may be presenting themselves a little differently. But they use these cultural traditions of being a Latino or African American or white or whatever, protecting to try to almost to mask or hide and to silence victims.
Absolutely. I'll give you a really quick example. When I went to the hospital to work with a survivor once, it was a 15-year-old girl who had been sexually assaulted during the summer. And she was with her mom, and her mom was very silent, but the daughter was talking about what happened to her. And so I asked her, you know, what are your plans for the summer? What are your plans for the weekend? Just kind of engaging and trying to build rapport. And she was having her quinceañera on Saturday. And I said, oh, tell me about your dress. Tell me about your party. And mom interrupted that really quickly. And she said, you know what, there's not going to be a party. And her comment to her daughter was, how in good faith can you walk down the aisle of a church wearing a white dress, knowing very well what you just did and what you let happen to you? She said, you're not a virgin anymore. You're damaged. And the whole meaning of your quince is ruined. So I don't fault mom for saying that. I have to understand that where that comes from was deeply rooted in mom's traditional sense of what it means to be a young woman being presented to society, right? And so those are constant battles that we have. It happens a lot of times with families where it stays silent. A family member sexually assaults another family member, and it just stays silent, and they have a tendency to deal with it internally because we don't want to ruin the family's name. We don't want to bring embarrassment or shame across.
We're taking a break. We're talking about traditions and social norms that perpetuate sexual violence all around us. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. You call in, you can remain anonymous, but we do want to hear your stories because that's how we can find a space for healing. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break. Stay tuned.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about traditions and social norms that allow, permit, and even promote sexual violence all around us. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And we got a tweet from Colette. It says, is there any connection between sexual violence and the lack of adequate sex education? Rose Luna is the executive director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. I'd like to hear your answer.
Personally, I agree with that statement. I agree that there is a connection. There are times, again, when I've worked in the emergency room or as an advocate went to the emergency room when there was someone that was sexually assaulted. And the trend that I saw there was that most folks went there because they just wanted to make sure they were okay medically. And then when I started to dig deeper and ask questions, oftentimes there was this confusion. They knew that they didn't like what happened to them. They knew that it was called rape, but they didn't truly understand that. So I think as a society, until we actually talk about what healthy sexuality is, there's going to always be that confusion about, you know, how are they going to understand what rape is then at that point? And then on top of that, we have these this misconception in society about what that is and whose fault it is in the response. So I think that if we had education starting very young to talk about, you know, equity and consent and what that looks like, that would begin to minimize this at some level. So I agree that if we were to have that education and consistently throughout a child's lifetime as they grow older, that would permeate out and we would begin to hopefully maybe minimize some of these incidences.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add something to what Rose is saying about consent, because I think it's really important as well to understand it. You know, within the context of intimacy and relationships, I think what we have to remember is that consent is never applied and it can never be assumed. Just because you are in a relationship with a person and you've had sex with them numerous times, it doesn't mean that they have permission to have sex with you whenever you want. And I think that's a lot of the misconception, too, is that within marriages, within communities of color, a lot of times as a woman, it's your responsibility, it's your duty, it's your wifely responsibility, right? And so when your husband wants this is what you give him. And so we see a lot of survivors who don't identify as sexual assault victims, but are in abusive domestic violence relationships as well. And so there's a connection between that also.
And let's go to the phones with Terry. Terry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. I agree wholeheartedly with the need for sexual education. I think it's also odd that we live in a country that inundates us with a plethora of erectile dysfunction medicine advertising on broadcast media, and yet we don't have the same responsibility regarding protecting against STDs and unwanted pregnancies with condom use. And I think there's a problem with the religious aspect of having a kind of a dichotomy between let's promote male sexual function, but we're not promoting male responsibility.
Well, those male sexual function pills are covered by insurance, so they know that the men can come up with the money to cover that, so there's a lot of advertising for it. But it all comes down to the Benjamins. So Rebecca Bernhardt, the policy coordinator for TASA, you know, if there was more insurance available to cover people who are the survivors of sexual assault, would is that a problem?
Well, yes, I think it is. I think there is a, you know, Texas has a health insurance problem that is pretty well established in terms of access to health insurance and affordability. So there's no question that that's a problem in terms of being able to provide for people's basic medical needs.
And what can't there be some sort of, I don't know, emergency insurance or what? If you have no health insurance and you are the victim of sexual assault, where can you turn? How do you get support? What's out there for you,
sure.
Rebecca?
Well, so if you need a sexual assault exam, if you've been assaulted, the forensic exam itself is covered by the state. So you don't have to worry about paying for that. But if you need medical care that is, you know, not forensic in nature, if you've been injured, you have to cover that out of pocket generally. Although there are some parts of the state where you can have access to a clinic that's not in a hospital where they don't necessarily charge for that. But in most places, you have to use your own insurance or pay out of pocket for the medical side of any medical care. I don't know if that distinction makes any sense, forensic versus medical services, but that's how people get covered in terms of their exams.
All right, let's go back to the phones with Andrea. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'd like to touch on the fundamental issue with generalizing the sexes. People are people. Sex isn't necessarily that much of a contributing factor. We need to worry about teaching kids civility, ethics. And that's one of the main issues, I think.
Okay, Andrea, thank you for that. Rick Gepritz Jr., how does the fluid nature of we're moving towards a non-binary way of looking at things. You know, it's not just straight male, straight female. There's right. All sorts of ways of going about this. What do I need to catch up on? Because I'm still kind of behind the curve.
It's not uncommon, right? I mean, these are new constructs that we are kind of embracing.
And, I'm an old guy, you know.
Yeah.
So I wanna understand.
Well, and these new constructs that we're embracing. It's new terminology. It's new ways of looking at how gender is viewed across everyone as people, right? But I to speak to her point, I agree 100%. I think what we need to focus on again is not so much genderizing the issue in the way that we talk about it, but really looking at inequality and inequity across the board. But I think what our community needs to do is our community needs to educate themselves now. I am by no means an expert in everything sexual assault and everything gender identity, but it is my responsibility, my obligation as a member in this community who wants to understand these issues and understand how people live their lives every day, excuse me, to educate myself, to ask questions, and to not be afraid of new things that come forth. And I think what happens is, to go back to our term, we get stuck in these traditions, we get stuck in these norms, and it is so hard to break away from those. So I think it's up to our next generation, it's up to our the ones that are coming up from underneath us to help us understand it and to give them the tools that they need to build the resources that they need to use the terminology that they are most comfortable with, and for us as the old fogies to embrace it, to not always have to understand it, but at least accept it and know that they're coming from a place of what they need and how they need to live their lives every day. And that is our responsibility. We can't force people back into what we think is right. We have to embrace new change and embrace how things are progressing along and not be stuck in those traditions.
And Rose Luna, Executive Director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. So tell me some of these social norms that we have or traditions that are around us that are still permitting this sexual assault.
I think that as a society, as a community, as a parent, as a family member, you know, as a you fill in the blank, I think it's important that, you know, there are fundamental truths to who we are and how we exist. So I think if we all start to just take a step back, and it's as simple as just recognizing someone for having agency as a person, regardless if we agree with them, disagree with them, regardless if we agree with their lifestyles or not, that person is worthy of us honoring them as an individual, and then they have the agency to make those choices. I think if we start there, I think what we tend to see a lot in our society is the othering of people. I think that then we start to build in a wall or just this difference that then begins to enable just those sources that we talked about earlier of power and those structures. I think it really is about us as a society taking a step back and just honoring individuals for who they are
and moving forward. And then on top of that, you know, again, with the work that we do, having those conversations about, you know, consent and what that means and what that looks like, and equity and equality, they're so intertwined. But I think we just take that very basic step of, as humans, you know, reacting and approaching each other in that manner, that can get us a step in that direction.
But do we have traditions here in our society that is allowing folks to commit sexual assault? I mean, like we said earlier, in prison, that seems to be something that happens. But, and we have it, it was in our, you know, these gymnasiums where we're teaching gymnastics, and we have it in there sometimes with some abuse in different churches. That's also that something that's been going on for a long time. People who are allowed to use their positions of trust in order to use their power. And then are we not following up? Are we not providing support services for the survivors? Are we shielding these institutions from justice? Where do we stand in trying to shatter these norms, recraft these traditions so that we can move forward as a society and honor everyone? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, Traditions, Social Norms, and Sexual Violence on the Source, when we come back. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Do we still have cultural institutions and traditions in our society that allow, promote, and even encourage sexual assault? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Rebecca Bernhardt, you're the TSA, the TASA Public Policy Coordinator. Up in Austin with the legislature, as you are tracking bills that are moving forward, are you seeing a difference with the lawmakers that they are taking this thing a lot more seriously, that it's no longer boys will be boys, or that we're going to move forward in Texas on this?
I think we are. This has been a really good session for our issue. I think that the legislature is really engaged. I think it's a combination of the evolution of Me Too and the sort of pressure that that's put on public officials, and also our work and other organizations' work to really make the issue a priority. But legislators are very engaged.
And what about some of these stories that have come out in the last couple of years with the gymnastics coaches and other abuses that have happened all around us?
Yeah, just this morning we had three of Larry Nassar's survivors testify before the Senate, a Senate committee. So yes, there's been a lot of press and a lot of, you know, publicity around this issue, and it really has raised its profile and gotten a lot more legislators positively engaged.
It seems like the flow chart is that, you know, we've had the Me Too, and that has given survivors some agency to come forward and talk about what happened to them. And then they were bringing that out of the shadows into the light and forcing lawmakers, policymakers into realizing the structures we have in place now are not adequate and things have got to change. I mean, is that right, Rose Luna, Executive Director?
Absolutely. Yeah, things have got to change, and they are slowly starting to change, I think. But as we've been talking about this whole hour, is that we do have these societal norms that uphold very strongly and allow, you know, some of these things to continue to happen with impunity. So, you know, at our conference that we're having coming up later this week and next week, is that we want to have this courageous conversation about what is tradition, what does that mean, what does that mean to you, and then what is the status quo power structure that we have, and let's kind of distinguish between those two, when they intertwine and when they don't. When I think about, you know, family traditions, they're beautiful, but also to be able to have the strength to challenge some of those that may inadvertently enable, these other things to happen. And also, not to confuse, I've heard a lot of folks talk about, you know, just traveling around the state when they talk about, you know, oh, the Latino culture, and there happens to be some child sexual assault happening within families in that area. And, you know, I've heard people say whether they meant, however they meant this, but they'll say things like, oh, that's a part of their culture. No, that is not a part of the culture. That is actually a violence. That's an offense. That is not okay in the Latino culture, but it gets confused. So I think just really kind of parsing out what that means and just having those conversations.
Along those lines, I'm going to take this call from Jorge. And Jorge, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So I live in San Antonio. I'm a Latino male. And talking about traditions, when you grow up as a Latino male, you have there's this idea of machismo. And growing up, that's not, you know, you're taught certain things by the men in your life. I was always resistant to it. But the way I heard my friends growing up talk about women, you know, it always seemed to me like there was a predatory aspect all the time, all the way through school, all the way up into college. And so I'm married now, and my wife works downtown. And every day, whenever she goes to walk outside, if she goes to lunch, she will get whistled at or yelled at. She has been cornered before. She has had men waiting for her. And these are Hispanic males, okay? And I think we need to stand up. You know, we need to stand up against this idea, because that is something that is part of our culture. And I say enough is enough. I'm tired of seeing my wife have to deal with this. And the problem is, we always talk about people in positions of power who are abusing power, but what about all the thousands and thousands of normal men who just, you know, think that they have a right to treat women that way, and they aren't abusing positions of power?
Thank you for the call. Appreciate your call. Sorry about those circumstances with your wife. Rick Giprich, Jr., TASA Regional Outreach and Support Program Director.
Yeah, thank you, Jorge, for sharing that story, and thank you for resisting that throughout your childhood and into your adulthood as well. And I think that's a really important thing to acknowledge, specifically for those young men who are trying to resist it, that it feels uncomfortable, and it feels like you're not doing what's expected of you to do. And so I applaud you for doing that, because you saying that gives other young men hope. Those young men who are resisting it gives them hope that it's okay to do that as well. But he's right. I mean, I was raised in a family that is very female centric, powerful women, very successful women. And so I was raised to be everything that a lot of the men in my life were not. And so I was very lucky, but I saw my friends, I saw how they talked about it. And I agree 100% with what Jorge said. It's part of our culture. It's part of this way of men being dominant, men being very aggressive, and men growing up in this culture where they have to do everything, right? And when we allow men to be raised in that community or raised in those kinds of families or in that situation, it doesn't give them the resources, the access, and the help that they need to live in and surround themselves with healthy behaviors.
So what we're talking about there is this level of toxic masculinity that poisons everyone around them,
right?
Okay, and including themselves. This is not an appropriate way to behave. It's not an appropriate way to think. And we got to figure out a way to get out of that. Rose Luna, Executive Director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. What's step number one?
I think step number one is doing kind of what Jorge did. He just resisted and recognized that that's not appropriate, that just because he is male or just because a person is male or identifies as male, that they immediately have this entitlement and this power. Now, he brought up a good point about, you know, it's about the regular folks that hold this attitude in addition to the power structures, which is why we mentioned we need to have a holistic approach. But no, absolutely, is taking that and resisting that urge or resisting that construct that because you are of a certain either ethnicity, race, gender identity, that you then have this entitlement of this privilege of power over somebody. There's privilege that some people hold just because of our societal setup, but just recognizing when something, you know, when that is harmful behavior and resisting that and challenging it.
I mean, it's just ridiculous. What does anyone think is going to result of whistling or catcalling at someone walking down the street? How does that result? What is that supposed to do? What does that get you?
Well, there's no accountability. I mean,
are you supposed to, or it's a demonstration of something. I mean, right. you're not, that person's not going to turn around and say, "Oh, wow, let's go out." You know, right. You know, it doesn't. You're not going to have some sort of sexual conquest. It is just some sort of preening and showing right. of how what a jackass you are.
When you don't know better, you don't do better. And so there's a lot of men who have grown up where, again, this is tradition, this is culture, this is a norm, this is how you treat women, this is how you talk about women, these are the things that you do with women. And there's no one in their lives who is telling them, hey, that's not okay, or hey, there's another way to look at it. And so
or hey, you're looking like a jerk.
Right, right. Okay. And I think it takes other men.
It's like, you look pretty weak. Right. You look like you are someone who's never actually had a real relationship with someone.
Right, and I think it takes other men to call those men out.
Okay. I've got an email from Rod. What do your guests think about when society chooses not to pay attention to and even elects candidates with a history of domestic and or sexual assault and abuse? What does that say to the victims? Of course, I guess we have President Trump. He's, you know, he said some terrible things and other people. Are we giving some sort of permitting to people who commit sexual assault, Rose Luna?
Well, that's a very loaded question, but it's absolutely true.
I mean, it happened. So, it's true. He's right before the whole America. We all saw it.
Absolutely. That does send the wrong message to survivors. So, yeah, you know, as an organization, we always stand really strong and tall against those things. Again, goes back to the societal norms. You still, you know, folks voted, and then there was results in an election. So there's some, you know, again, the misconception and the misinformation about sexual assault, what that means and how that reverberates out, how that affects all women, how that affects all survivors. We still have a lot of work to do on that end. And again, holistic approach is what it's going to take. So that happens. And we absolutely will point that out. We'll challenge that. We stand strong because as an organization, we stand with survivors, and whatever, you know, impedes that progress, we're going to be right there. But that's unfortunate. And it's happening, you know, every day. But and not just, you know, national elections. We got to look at where elections, you know, count even more to a person, which is their local elections. Who's on your city council? Who's your DA? Because they're, you know, are they prosecuting? What is their take on sexual assault? And in particular, adult non-stranger sexual assault. So,
domestic violence as well. I want to thank all of our guests. Rose Luna is the executive director of the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. Rick Giprich Jr. is the TASA Regional Outreach and Support Program Director. And Rebecca Bernhardt is the TASA Public Policy Coordinator. Their conference is here in San Antonio. It's going to be here this week. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.